Two Dimension Podcast, Episode 4. Hey folks, welcome back. It's a Two Dimension Podcast, the comic book podcast with no direction. I'm your host, Dallas Busha. We're going to switch it up a little bit today. We're going to have Don and Al here to talk a little bit about comic books and comic book artists and some really cool, quirky books. Rook is not going to be able to join us tonight, and I'm just going to let Don and Al take the floor here. So without further ado, enjoy.
All right, here we are with podcast, what, number 4, I think, right?
This should be 4.
It should be 4, but we'll see.
And you are?
I'm Al.
And I'm Don.
And we're Al and Don.
we tried to get together, the four of us, and then as anything, it all breaks up. Nobody could get together. So Dallas is supposed to start us off, and then we're going on for here.
So here we go with, we're going to talk about what comics we got today. I just got some Doom Patrol, and I got to say, they're some of my favorite comic books of all time. I don't remember ever buying any of these when I was a kid. I just remember kids giving them to me. You know, I don't know why. I guess maybe they were, by the time that I started like getting into them, they had already been, canceled or whatever. But I always loved these books. And since you guys were talking about writers before, the writer of them was a guy named Arnold Drake, who wrote some of my favorite 60s books for DC. He created the Doom Patrol. He wrote Challengers of the Unknown. He did the Jerry Lewis and Bob Hope books, which were like some of my all-time favorite books. I mean, the art on them is beautiful.
That was Neil Adams, right?
Neil Adams did some later on, but the majority of them were by Bob Oxner. Oh. And Oxner was like amazing. He could do like realistic yet funny kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And a great good girl artist. So it's like, you know, getting these at this great price that I got were like, you know, blast from the past. You know, I mean, the showcases, which reprint these are nice, but, you know, full color and, you know, with the DC go-go checks and all that stuff, you know, that's like the best.
The Doom Patrol, when I was a kid, this is back in the early 70s, DC put out 100-page Super Spectaculars for 50 cents, which are some of my favorite books. And there was one issue that they did for Batman, and it had the Doom Patrol. I had never seen them, never heard of them, and it had one story, I guess it was an origin story about them. I absolutely loved it, and I've seen them in other reprints, but, you know, it's always been a past thing I've seen. I've never read them when they came out. Is this the same creative team the whole time?
Yeah, Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani, who was, I think he was from Argentina. He was maybe one of the first foreign artists that worked for, you know, DC, and they did the whole thing all the way till the end. And the weird thing about this book, or the cool thing, or whatever you want to say, is at the end, they were actually killed off. And at the very last book, which is 121, it's like the editor and the writer look at you and goes, okay, kids, if you want them back, you know, write back to us or whatever. If not, they're dead, you know. So that always freaked me out. It goes like, wow, they killed these guys off. And another interesting thing is they're kind of like at the beginning, you know, where they were like these four misfit superheroes, or three, and their leader was some guy in a wheelchair, you know, X-Men, I don't know, you know, I think X-Men came out first, you know, but Arnold Drake speculates that maybe, like, Stan Lee heard about it, and he copied him. I don't think so, you know, but real interesting book, and the thing about it is, in these books, like, the villains are almost as weird as the heroes. The heroes are kind of weirder in a way. They have these weird, like the one guy, Negative Man, he looks like a mummy, and he like bursts out and he does all his things. Robot Man's always like pissed off, and Elastigirl is like, well, she's like Reed Richards or something like that, you know. And then they fight the weirdest characters or whatever. I actually think the people they fought were called the Brotherhood of Evil, you know, Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, but in this case it was the Brotherhood of Evil. So it's one of my favorite books from the 60s or whatever.
And now the Elastigirl, I thought she could shrink and grow large. I didn't think she shrunk. She stretched, did she?
I think she stretches. Uh-huh. Yeah, she does. She's like kind of like Reed Richards or whatever, you know. I think she does, you know, get small too, but for the most part, she's always like, you know, getting real big and, you know, wailing on whoever she has to, like, you know. But yeah, I mean, these books are like, you know, that and the Challengers. I love the Challengers of the Unknown.
Too.
You know, the Drake's great again. He wasn't a creator. Kirby created them. And but Bob Brown, who did the majority of them, one of my favorite, you know, guys or whatever, you know, always had the big monster guys that they fought and the weird sci-fi things. Great stuff.
That is one thing I wanted to bring up. You and I have talked about Bob Brown before. I've always loved him. When I was a kid, he drew Superboy, which is some of my very favorite work. Murphy Anderson inked him because he also inked Kurt Swan on Superman. Again, this is the early 70s. I love the forms Bob Brown drew. It's like any artist, he always had certain things he did. Everybody seemed to have strange teeth, strange mouths
right.
and teeth. But I loved how he drew the forms. I loved how he drew everything. And again, as a kid, he was one of my favorites. Over the years, I've heard a lot of people kind of considered him a hack. And that's something you and I talk about a lot, is people that you didn't like as a kid and you considered a hack. And now we look back on it, and they were actually quite good. So why don't we talk about a few of these guys?
Well, Bob Brown would be a good example. As much as I loved the early Challengers, you know, I was kind of like half-half on Bob Brown. I always loved Premiani, who did the Doom Patrol, because he was really like an exceptional draftman. And Bob Brown was good, but it was just like, you know, yeah, you know, it's nice, but man, Kirby and Neil Adams and all these guys. But as the years go on and you look at the books, you really grow to appreciate guys like Bob Brown because they told the story. It was simple. They drew everything right. You know, the thing flowed. You know, the action was always good. I mean, you know, and this guy was great all the way. I mean, he ended up in Marvel, I think, after DC. I think he ended up doing Avengers and Daredevils and stuff like that, you know, in like the mid-70s or
something
like that.
I think one of the Avengers, I think Dave Cockrum finished him. Okay,
yes.
Now see, again, that was one of my favorites. That was the one with Claw and Solar.
Yep.
And again, that was one of my favorites. Dave Cockrum was probably, especially as a young kid, one of my very favorite artists.
Yep.
But I liked the combination of him and Bob Brown together. Bob Brown, what I always liked was the forms. The finishes, well, other people inked him. But, again, he was one that I've always enjoyed. And when Dave Cockrum went over him, it was just the perfect blend.
Murphy Anderson, Dave Cockrum.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Challengers, he inked them himself. And, I mean, you know, I mean, that's a lot to do. You know, pencil inking in a book. And then he probably was doing other stuff, too. The covers, probably, you know. So, and I think, I think he may have done an issue of Doom Patrol. I'm not 100% sure, though. I think, because one of these is a crossover with the Challengers, issue 102. So I think he may have had something to do with the Challengers Doom Patrol crossover. But yeah, he's definitely like one that, as the years go by, I appreciate more and I love more.
Yeah.
You know, just because you look at his work and, like you said, it might be a little rough, but it's really well drawn. You just got to kind of like get over the finishes a little bit, or learn to enjoy just nice, loose, you know, brushwork or whatever, you know. He's definitely, well, Don Heck would have been another one too, you know.
See, Don Heck was one, I'll admit this in front of all four listeners we have, is I couldn't stand him. When I was a kid, I just thought, why does this guy even bother? When I got his books, I just absolutely despised it. And when you mentioned Hack, he was the first one I would think of. Well, since then, I've heard people, another professional, I guess in the 80s, had mentioned about Don Hack that, you know, people didn't like his work. He says, but the problem was he was never interested in doing superheroes. He always wanted to be a slick romance comic strip artist, you know, that type of thing. I couldn't see it, but then I started seeing some of his early work. The early Iron Man work and some of the other things that I was too young to see in the beginning. My God, the guy was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely beautiful work. He would have been fantastic, the newspaper strip, doing one of the romance strips. It was elegant. It was finely done. And I guess some of it was, if you're not interested in what you're doing and you have to keep putting out that monthly grind all the time, maybe that would happen. But he turned into one of my favorite ones. But again, when you start seeing work in the later life and you just don't care about it anymore, I guess, you know, it changes things.
Well, yeah. The thing about both Heck and Bob Brown is that, like, I guess when maybe we're younger or whatever it is, maybe we don't know how to appreciate some of the art more. We tend to be more like, you know, fascinated by how, like, beautiful the line work is and how precise and, like, you know. And some of these, both of these guys, their finished work was a little sketchy. And it takes a little while maybe to appreciate it. But Don Heck, when I picked up one of the showcases, there was some, I think it was Avengers that he did. I mean, I liked them as a kid. I remember buying them. But when I saw them in black and white, it really jumped out at me. You know, there was a real, like, Alex Toth-y look to some of the stuff that he did.
Yeah.
You know, and not as much as the Avengers, but maybe more like in the short stories or the sci-fi stories that he did for Fantasy Masterpieces, some of the Atlas stuff. It was real, you know, spotting blacks and, like, you know, sketchy, but like you said, romance work or more like civilian type of stuff, you know? And it really does jump out at you. You know, and again, some of these guys maybe weren't the best for superheroes, you know. I mean, Jack Kirby kind of spoiled us, you know.
Well, a lot of these guys, I know, especially Marvel, they were trying to emulate Jack Kirby, which, you know, was what we all wanted. But I think he should have just been himself. But,
well, I think Stan wanted him. I've heard stories that Stan Lee wanted Buscema to kind of, like, emulate Kirby, so Buscema kind of, like, you know, changed the style a little bit to be more Kirby-esque, because that's what they wanted. I mean, here's another one that, when you said that, it just came to mind. Rich Buckler.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like swiping Kirby at the beginning, and then he kind of, like, toned it down a little bit. But I remember reading somewhere that he was told that we wanted in the Marvel Kirby style, so it was like, okay, you know, that's what they want. You know, that's what I'll give them. You know.
Well, all the early Marvel work, it was all done by Jack at the first. I guess he always did one or two issues at least.
Yeah.
And then another artist would step in and follow him. I remember reading about John Buscema. He said at one point Stan Lee had him sit with Jack Kirby to see what he was doing, because I don't think John Buscema was ever interested in doing superheroes. Mm-hmm. And he said he sat down with Jack. Jack showed him a few things. He said within an hour he knew everything he needed to do for superhero comics. And basically, Jack just showed him a few things about how to make it dynamic, how to put the power, the stances, you know, certain things like that. And he was right. He did know everything he needed to do. He was quite successful. But he still was his own man. He wasn't trying to, you know, copy Jack Kirby. He just took some of the sensibilities that he did.
Definitely, yeah. But his style before that, you know, even in some of the Silver Surfers, it's kind of different. You know, the panels are a little bit different. You know, the gestures are a little bit different. After Kirby left Marvel, it became, like, more, you know, like the six-panel grids and stuff like that, you know, which is fine. But then when Buscema got a hold of Conan, well, that was his, like, I guess that was his favorite book. I don't know.
Well, originally they wanted, when Roy Thomas was putting Conan together, he was going to use John Buscema, who was a big fan of Conan. But John Buscema was one of the top artists, and he had a higher page rate, so they couldn't afford him. So they took unknown Barry Smith and put him on the book, which, you know, completely changed everything. And later on, as Conan was selling quite well, they brought John Buscema in, and he stayed with it forever.
Till almost the end. I mean, he was doing them, like, you know, Savage Sword and all that stuff all the way to the end, you know. And it's funny because the Barry Smith early stuff, it was okay, you know, it wasn't, but towards the end when he did Red Nails and Song of Red Sonja and all that, that's when he really found his style or whatever, you know. And even though he's the original Conan artist or whatever, you know, John Buscema is, like, you know, God, he's Mr. Conan, I guess. He probably did 200 or 300 issues of, like, you know, with everything combined, you know, regular issues and Savage Swords and all that
stuff.
Well,
they also had a series called King Conan. He was drawing like 3 or 4 Conan books a month, it seemed like.
Yeah, and he could just, like, knock them out. It was like, okay, you know, give me another Conan or whatever. I mean, it's good and it's bad because I really did like a superhero work a lot.
Right. Well, at the end, I remember, I think it was at some place in San Diego, people were talking about John Buscema's Conan. And it was Michael Kaluta. And he said, well, I think he just got bored with the character. Well, like I said, he was doing, I don't know how many, for, what, 20 years, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, anybody would get bored. But he always did solid work. Well, what's another artist that you didn't care for as a kid that you appreciate now?
Well, I'll get to that in a second, but I got to say one last thing about Buscema. I always liked it when he inked his own work. It was so much nicer when he inked his own work. I mean, Dick Giordano did a great job. Neil Adams inked them once. It was well, when he did Conan and he penciled in and inked it, it was so much nicer. You know, I mean, he's one of my top 10 favorite guys. So, yeah.
I always liked it when Ernie Chan inked him on Conan. That was my favorite. I actually don't remember John Buscema's inks.
Oh, he did a few. He didn't do a lot, but he did a few. He did a few in Savage Sword, and he did a few in, I'm not sure if he did one for the original Conan, but I think it was in Savage Sword he inked a few. And then there was some, portfolios and calendars and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of artists that as a kid I was like, you know, like, well, I know, here's one. I love his work now, but, and even up to a few years ago I was kind of like, so... And I talked about him in the Creepy podcast. It's Jerry Grandinetti. He had a really weird style. It was very, like, loose and expressionistic, kind of, and it was done in washes. And whenever I read those Creepy and Eerie books, it was like, wow, everybody, like, Reed Crandall, all these guys are drawn real, like, straightforward, illustrative, and this guy's, like, real abstract. I don't know about this, you know. But once again, you know, as the years go by and you read more and more books and you see more stuff, it's like, yeah, you know what? I mean, this stuff is really good. It's very, very different. You know, it's not easy to get into. But once you get into it, you'll see what a great artist this guy was. And he was around in the 40s, or at least in the 50s. He worked for Eisner, and he penciled some spirit stories. I know that much. And he worked, he did something called Dr. Drew also. So, yeah, he's... Definitely another one. He did some war stuff, too, for DC.
So I'm not familiar with the name. I'd have to see the work.
Yeah, I'll show you some of his stuff. His stuff is really, really great stuff. Sam Glanzman, speaking of war books.
Yeah, no, I did like him. And besides all the war books, Marvel put out a graphic novel in 87 or 88 called A Sailor Story. And he was telling his story of being in the Navy during World War II. And that was just absolutely phenomenal. He wrote it and drew it, and that's one of my favorite pieces.
Oh, yeah. See, when I saw his work, I always thought it was like, you know, oh, this guy's trying to be Joe Kubert or whatever, you know, not as polished as Kubert or whatever. And he did some Hercules stuff for Charlton, which was like, oh, it's okay, you know, the figures weren't drawn that well. But again, you go back and you look at it now, it's really not. I mean, I like the old school storytelling, you know, it's like, kind of like simple, tells a story, the characters move and stuff like that. It's not, you know, all just like one beautiful panel page that, you know, kind of doesn't tell a story, but probably will sell good on eBay after it's, you know, published or whatever. You know, I like the more basic, simplistic storytelling or whatever.
See, as a kid, I always liked really strong, bold, simple lines. Dave Cockrum's work, especially when he inked himself, was some of my favorite. I like the Kurt Swan Superman. I like the Dick Spring Batman, you know, that type of stuff. I like Jack Kirby, you know, that anything like that. So when you had anybody that had a kind of a sketchy, funny style, I didn't care for it. One I didn't enjoy, which I've grown to appreciate now, and I feel bad for saying this, I could not stand Dick Dillon when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I liked the Justice League. Most of the stuff I enjoyed as a kid were the old reprints from the 50s, which, again, were out before I was ever around. DC, when I was growing up, they'd always put out an issue where they'd have a news story in the front, and then the backup was what I always bought the book for. But I'd buy Justice League, and it was always Dick Dillon and, I think, Irv Novak.
Frank
McLaughlin. And I bought them, and then at one point, I think I was 10, I thought, why am I buying these? I really don't like them. And, you know, Dick Dillon continued to put a lot of work out, and I'd see him once in a while, and, I mean, I read them, but I just grew to where I didn't care for the style. At one point, I was complaining about it when I was in college, and my friend had said, those guys make a lot more money. Which kind of blew my mind, but he was explaining about you're getting paid a page rate, and this guy's doing two books a month, whereas these ones that we love so much are only putting out one book a month, or sometimes one book every 2 months. Well, it didn't seem fair when I love one so much and not the other. Now I look back on some of this work, and it is solid work. It's good work. It's not as polished as I like, but that was what kept the companies going. Sure. They got the job done. So
when Giordano inked them, it was a lot more polished, you know?
Yeah, it depends on who inked them as well. And, yeah, I always liked everything Dick Giordano ever did. But, and I'm going to apologize to Dick Dillon right now. I do have grown to love your work, and please forgive a foolish young man that bought your comics and always said that he didn't like you.
Well, you know, once again, you know, Dick Dillon was the Justice League guy. But then again, every once in a while you'd get a Barry Smith, this like unbelievable thing, or a Mike Kaluta, or a Bernie Wrightson, or Adams, that will blow your mind, and you go like, oh my God, these guys are like, and you kind of forget about Dick Dillon, but now, you know, you go back, and then it's like, yeah, you know, this guy drew every character in DC Universe probably at that time. He did them, you know, he did them consistently well. And if he was lucky enough to get a really good inker, man, I thought it was really excellent work, you know? I mean, going back, I mean, this guy must have done like 70 or 80 issues of the Justice League. I know it was from like, he took over from Sikowski. Now, what do you think about Mike Sikowski? There's a lot of people that don't like him. I do like Mike Sikowski.
Oh, I do. He was one of them I talked about. They do a lot of his reprints, and I always liked his type of work. I look at it now, and I can see why some people wouldn't like it, but again, I always did enjoy him.
Yeah, I did too, yeah. Yeah, I mean, his stuff was kind of like, again, in the Toth-ish vein or whatever,
yeah.
You know, and maybe, I do like his Justice League, but I like some of the, remember, did you ever see the Wonder Woman's that he did, where she changed her costume and she became the new Wonder Woman?
Yeah, Denny O'Neil did.
I love those.
Well, somebody we work with, Melody Johnson, she always gets them. She was showing those to me, but I remember when I started reading comics, that was the Wonder Woman I knew. And my dad would explain to me about the old Wonder Woman in the red, white, and blue outfit. But I didn't quite understand this one because, you know, she knew martial arts, I guess. She had an Asian mentor with her all the time. Yeah, who was in the Superman books. And I didn't quite understand it. And the Lois Lane books, I'd see some of those, and she was the same exact thing. She knew martial arts. She was always fighting. So they kind of turned Wonder Woman into, Lois Lane. But yeah, I that was the Wonder Woman I started reading. And then I guess it was 74 where she turned back into the Wonder Woman everybody knew.
Right, yeah. I do like those. Okay, here's my ultimate guilty pleasure. This is a guy who I absolutely did not like when I was a kid. Again, another one of those creepy and eerie guys or whatever. And I really do like his work now because his style wasn't really good for that type of book. Tony Tallarico. Yep, Tony Tallarico. I don't know if you remember Tony Tallarico?
No, I never read any of the creepy and eerie stuff.
Okay.
So I'm not familiar with him.
He also did you ever see, like I think it's in the 60s, they did a superhero version of Dracula, Frankenstein and the Wolfman.
Yeah, with Dull, right?
Did you ever see that?
I've seen, yes. I had the Dracula, and I've seen a couple of the others.
That was Tallarico, yeah.
Oh.
There you go. I love his work now. It's so much fun, and that's something that's missing from a lot of books, is just fun. He had a kind of a cartoony style. It was kind of like, he worked with another guy called Belfraccio, who I didn't know until recently, but I they were a team. They also worked on some of those 60s Blue Beetles or whatever, but I remember when I read those creepies and eeries, it was like, wow, this guy is like not really that great, you know? I mean, here's like Reed Crandall again and Angela Torres and Al Williamson, and then, but you know, going back again, I love it. It's fun. I don't know if it brings back good memories. I don't know what it is, but I mean, you know, I look at it and I think it's like, well, maybe it's not technically the sharpest looking art I've ever seen, but it's reasonably well drawn, tells a story. And I get enjoyment out of it. That's the main thing, that you get enjoyment out of it, you know?
Well, the work I saw that you just mentioned, I liked it. The only thing I didn't like is it seemed like they were kind of almost thumbnail sketches. He didn't seem to plan things out anymore, which I guess is money-wise. But I like the Christmas. I like how he drew. I just wish he would have spent a little bit more time planning the stories out and, you know, added a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, he was just like, He's still around today, and he does a lot of those How to Draw books.
Oh, really?
You see, like, How to Draw Monsters by Tony Tallarico, and he also worked on, I'm not sure if he published it or not, but I remember seeing some work of his, in an old monster magazine called Quasimodo's Monster Magazine, and he did a Star Trek spoof in one of those, and it was really good. I'm like, you know, this guy was more of a possibly better suited for humor than he was for, like, you know, scary monsters and, you know, all the dark and stuff that Creepy and Eddie were famous for. But I know he's not well liked, but, you know, Tony Tallarico, man, I think you're great, you know? I mean, and these guys were probably doing 2 or 3 books a month, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Kirby could do 2 or 3 books a month, yeah, we know that, but Kirby was like, you know, who's Kirby, you know? Who's the king?
Well, he was doing 4 books a month when Marvel was around, which is unfathomable, 4 yeah. books a month, and the quality he was putting out. But I also read that, you know, he was up early in the morning and drawing late at night. You know, the books had to get out, and he put them out. But 4 books a month. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's 5 pages a day, probably, or maybe even more. I don't know. You know, and it probably 5 books a month, and if they needed something over the weekend, it was like, okay, give Jack a call. Okay, I'll knock it out for you, you know. Just, you know, here you go, thumbnail sketches, you know, give me a good anchor or whatever, you know. Give me Joe Sinnott or Chick Stone or whatever, and, you know, I'm good, you know. But, yeah, Tallarico would be another one.
All right, and then going down the list, Irv Novak.
I love Irv Novak.
Was there ever a time you didn't like Irv Novak?
You know, probably maybe like Dick Dillon. It was just like, oh, yeah, he's another guy who draws Batman or whatever. But, you know, when I got to really learn to love Irv Novak when Stranko had that Media Scene book, and it was there was a 1-page illustration. I can't remember what the character was. Irv Novak penciled. And I thought, wow, this is really, really good. I mean, this guy's, like, really good. I guess, you know, depending on who inked him, you know what I mean? I guess, you know what, Dick Giordano would make everybody look good, you
right.
know? I mean, some of the other guys were good, you know, but it's like, you know, they maybe, you know, Giordano was the man, you know, as far as inkers go.
Well, you know, Dick Giordano was also a good penciler.
He was.
I loved his pencil work. I guess maybe he didn't feel he was fast enough. But, yeah, he made anybody look nice. He was always able to add himself to the pencils, but not overpower and completely change it.
Right.
But Irv Novak, when I was a kid, I used to read. I think he had done The Flash, is where I read most of his work. I liked him, and then after a while, I started to dislike him. It happens. I look back on it now, and again, it was solid work that got it out. But yeah, the finishes in him was what certain inkers would really bring it out, and others just didn't.
And he was solid, though. I mean, if I go back and look at his books, and the figures are all well drawn. I mean, they have a certain style to them. You know, maybe you like the style, maybe you don't. But I always thought his work was pretty competent or whatever. I don't think it was, I don't remember it being like real flashy or real like, you know, like Neil Adams or somebody like that, you know.
Right.
Well, here you go. Here's one. Oh, boy. Here's another one. Frank Robbins. I love Frank Robbins now. But back in the day, oh, no.
Well, Frank Robbins is one that people talk about the most. I've seen his work. I know he did Batman, and I've seen some of those. But the ones I remember the most was The Invaders. Now, and also he did another thing for Marvel called The Human Fly. Now, I'll say this. I bought The Invaders. I was so excited. I was a kid. And I thought, well, this is a neat story. I read it and thought it was great. And there'd be certain pages, and I'm like, man, this is some of the best work I've ever seen. And then reading through it, other panels, I'm like, oh, this is horrifying. What is this, you know? Some of the stuff he did was a bit wonky, but nevertheless, I bought every issue of The Invaders he did, and it wasn't like there was nothing else in the racks, and I just wanted to get something. It was some of the first stuff I pulled off the rack. The Human Fly, that first issue, when I read it, it got my pulse pounding. It was an exciting story. He really had a lot of emotion and feeling to it, and so he was one that I loved, but at the same time, I said, this guy is a hack. As I see this work now, I'm thinking, what was I thinking? This guy was phenomenal. He had a fantastic storytelling ability. He was a good artist, but he also had a cinematic feel to it. It looked like he was doing movies. There was other work he'd done. There was just a couple I mentioned, but I've seen
He did The Shadows, too, a few of those.
Oh, okay. There was a bunch of work he did, and he was phenomenal. But I think that was a case of not wanting to do stuff he was doing. I think he was more interested. Didn't he have a syndicated strip for a while?
Johnny Hazard, yeah.
Yeah, I think he wanted to do more work like that, which is phenomenal.
It was just like Kniff. I mean, to me anyway, not as... Obviously, Kniff and Noel Sickles are, you know, top all time, whatever. Frank Robbins is almost there. I mean, that's what got me to really like him. I was like, when I would see his work, it was like, oh man, I'm going from Neil Adams, I'm going from Kurt Swan or whatever to like Frank Robbins. This is like sketchy, and you know, the anatomy's weird. And but when I saw like the Johnny Hazard, it was like, well, these guys are really kind of like you said, cinematic Kniff style artist or whatever, you know. And then when I looked at the Invaders again, and it's like, you know, it really works. It's like, this is like almost like a golden age book in the 70s, you know. It fits it perfectly.
Yeah, he was phenomenal. But I'm guessing, I was a kid when I read these, and I liked it and hated it at the same time, which is odd to say. But sometimes when you get older, your sensibilities change, and you start understanding what they're trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, he's absolutely probably the top of people that were misunderstood that people appreciate a lot more now.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, God, I mean, his work is like, I mean, I have a Toth book, and Toth puts him like right up there with all the all-timers or whatever. And if Alex Toth says he's one of the great guys of all time, hey, man, he's up there, you know, with me. But it's like, again, it's an acquired taste, you know. It's like Milton Kniff drawing Batman, okay, you know. If you acquire the taste, hey, you know, like I did, hey, it's great. You know, if you don't, hey, you know, what can I tell you, you know. And a lot of these guys are like that, you know. It's just like, you know, you kind of got to, like, you know, learn to like them. You know, they're not like, maybe they're not accessible artists. I don't know if that's the way to put it. You know, it's not accessible in the sense that, you know, it's like, it looks like Jack Kirby, or it looks like Neil Adams, or, you know, one of the upper echelon, you know, superhero guys or whatever. They were a little different, off the beaten path maybe, but, you know, these guys were like, they drew, you know, hundreds of comics, you know. And I think Frank Robbins was always paired with Frank Springer as an inker. And those, I mean, Springer had a different style, but they worked well together. They had that looseness or whatever, you know. And I mean, they were probably better suited for doing newspaper strips.
I think that's what their interest was. When you just keep mentioning Kniff doing Batman, I think if he did, we'd probably talk about what a hack he was instead of, you know, this golden age genius that everybody worships.
Yeah, and Robbins did, I think he created Man-Bat, so, you know, that's one of his.
Yeah, he did.
So, you know. Well, here's one. I know you love, and you'll know exactly who I'm talking about right now. You love this lady. But I remember, and I did like the older Metamorphos, but for a while I never really got into Ramona Fraiden or whatever. But I know, Don, you're like a big fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Ramona Fraiden is one of my very favorite artists. I loved everything she did. She, when I first discovered her, it was in these reprints DC put out of Aquaman. She did Aquaman, I guess, in the 50s. And that, to this day, is some of my very favorite work. She had an expressive, cartoony style, but it had strong lines. It was just the kind of work I loved. And it absolutely looked like Aquaman lived underwater. And like a lot of kids that grew up reading comics, it always made you want to go draw. After you read the comic, you just, you know, find a pen and paper or pencil and paper and start drawing. And to this day, whenever I pull out a Ramona Fraiden comic, I immediately start drawing from it. I love how she set up her panels. I loved how she placed all of her characters. I just think she was phenomenal. She was the one that created Aqualad, or designed him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then later, a friend of mine, I was just telling Al, when I was 9, one of my best friends in school had a bunch of comics from the Silver Age, early 60s, you know, old Batman, 80-page giants. And when I'd stay the night on Friday nights once in a while, his mom would take us up in the attic and let us get about 20 books out. And that was the first time I ever saw Metamorpho. At the time, that was my friend's favorite. And, you know, Metamorpho, the Element Man. And I thought, man, this guy's ugly. He's so creepy. My friend loved him. But yet, feeling that way, when I read the stories, I couldn't look away. They were just phenomenal work. She, I guess, co-created Metamorpho. As I was in high school, she drew the Plastic Man comeback. And it seemed to me like she was just more interested in having fun. And they also did a Super Friends comic book from the cartoon. And I bought those because she drew them. She always had a flowing line. I always loved the forms and colors. And it's funny, I never knew it was a woman drawing these strips. But to this day, she's absolutely one of my favorites. I had read on the internet that she thought it was funny when she goes to conventions and she's got guys in their 40s and 50s coming up and telling her how much they loved her work. Well, I'm one of you. Ramona, I love you, and I always have.
It's funny because I did love Metamorpho when I was, I was like 6 or 7, maybe 8 or something. But then after a while, I didn't, I was like, oh yeah, Ramona Freyden, okay, whatever. But I really love the work now because it's different. Maybe that's what it is. It's just different. You kind of, sometimes you get tired of your stock superhero artist or whatever, and these guys are they're just different and they stand out because they're different. And the thing about that you said before about reading a comic book and making you want to go and draw that, it's like the ultimate compliment,
Oh, and still, I love seeing those old books and just how she put them together. But, that's one thing. Everybody has different taste. There's certain artists everybody likes. And there's certain artists that some people will like, some people just despise right on the same level.
Yeah.
In the Navy, there was a friend of mine on the ship that was a really good artist. And I was telling him about the cartoonist I liked. And he started laughing. And he said, it's funny. I love your work. And he says, but I hate every one of these people that you mentioned. Well, whoever somebody likes, somebody else dislikes. But Ramona Freyden, to me, was always at the top, and I was always aggravated that she didn't do every book DC put out. So.
Well, she did a lot in the 70s. I remember seeing her, like you said, Super Friends and all that stuff. She probably did Aquaman's and some of the Superman family books or whatever. I seem to remember her doing some.
Well, she did a bunch of stuff. She ended up doing Brenda Starr for the newspaper.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, she did it for a long time. She doesn't do it anymore. Colleen Doran took it over.
Oh, I didn't know that either. It's interesting. Okay.
But Ramona Freyden did it for a long time. Her husband was an artist. I think he was in charge of the cartoons at the New Yorker or something. But I think at one point she stopped doing a lot of comic book work because she said it's just not fun anymore. I guess it's when everything changed and stuff. But I think by that time she was just doing, projects she thought was fun. I know she loved Metamorpho.
Oh, me too.
And me too. But again, it was a lot of work and it was solid work, and she always put it out, and I just loved every line she did.
Yeah, Metamorpho was a book that, I remember, DC would put out a lot of, not thinking about it, DC put out a lot of strange characters in the 60s. Metamorpho was one of them, with Simon Stagg and that, and those characters, and they hold up today. You remember them, and that's the thing about her work, the fun part about it. It was fun to look at, it was just like, yeah, this is kind of a pleasurable, read. I'll go along with this,
Oh, Metamorpho was in Justice League Unlimited, the cartoon, animated cartoon.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
Stagg and all those characters are in there. And Java, the Ape-Man.
Java, yeah.
Yeah, so, like I said, they still, people today can see it on the cartoon.
Here you go, Tom Sutton. I love Tom Sutton. He's got another one that's got a cartoony style. Again, he did, a lot of stuff that people don't like, but this was a guy who was always changing style. He would do some pen and ink. He would do some in washes. He would do some in pencils. He did some of the coolest stuff ever. He started out Warrens, then he went on to do stuff for Marvel. If you ever saw the Planet of the Apes, black and white, some beautiful work. Some of it was kind of experimental looking, but always nice. But then when he ended up at Charlton doing all the horror books or whatever with all these painted covers, man, those are so cool. I love Charlton Comics, so, but those are so cool. And he's like a guy that, he's not talked about that much anymore. He passed away a few years ago, but, I love Tom Sutton's work.
I liked him. I guess I'd say I was more indifferent to him. I always enjoyed his work, but he wasn't one of my favorites, but I never disliked him either.
Right, yeah. He just had a strange, quirky style. I guess a lot of these guys we're talking about had quirky styles, and that's what makes them, cooler now, the fact that they are a little bit different or whatever, you know. So, but anyway, those are some of our favorite unsung. I'm sure there's plenty more, you know. And if we think about them, we'll talk about them more. But you know, I guess that's a pretty good segment we got right now.
That's it. And the moral to this segment is be careful what you don't like when you're young, because
yeah,
when
right.
you're older, you're going to end up loving it and you'll feel bad about it.
And you'll feel bad about it. And just remember, just give these guys a second chance. They're great artists. All right, well, I guess it's back to you, Dallas.
Thanks, guys. That's going to be it for this episode, folks. Leave us a message on the blog. Tell us what you thought about the episode. And the next one should be up in about a week. So until then, take care of yourselves and read more comics.